Welcome to Founders Focus, a podcast made for founders by founders. I'm Scott Case, CEO and co-founder of Upside, and I created Founders Focus to help share free resources and actionable advice. Together, we're building a community for business leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders to come together to tackle today's challenges. This podcast is powered by my awesome team at Upside. Please visit foundersfocus.com to join the live video sessions or to catch up on past topics.
I'm very, very excited to spend some time today with Scott Moody. He is the CEO and the chief member advocate of K4 Connect. And he may even tell us a little bit about where that name comes from. Scott has run a bunch of successful companies. He's also tripped and fallen once or twice, which is where we'll spend some time today. When I asked him to join us for Founders Focus, he said he wasn't really interested in talking about the successes, even though we'll touch a little bit on successes. But it's really about getting into the challenging times. And for many of us, this pandemic has really tested us in those ways. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott to introduce himself briefly, and then we'll dig in here. So Scott, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Scott, great to be here, and pleasure to meet everybody today on the line. So So Scott Moody, as you mentioned, CEO, co-founder, and chief member advocate for K4 Connect. Previously, I had started a company called Authentech. We raised a bunch of money outside from venture, took the company public, and then we're in 2012, we were acquired by Apple. So if you're familiar with the Touch ID, right, that was really came from Authentech. So that company was started by me and another guy, usually referred to as the smart guy.
Awesome. Well, what you and I chatted about was talking about the dark side of being a founder and the challenges that are there. So I don't usually talk about my own failures. When I run down my resume, it's things like, yeah, started Priceline, took it public, did this thing with Network for Good, ran Malaria No More, did all of those things. So I'm going to give you my brief version of just a sampling of the various failures. So we launched a product called Priceline for gasoline in the late 90s, early 2000s. We also launched a product for name, your price for groceries and something called Perfect Yard Sale, all of which had to be shut down. We let 450 people go on a single day. And I spent the next 6 months unwinding all kinds of challenges that we created. The last company I started before Upside is called Main Street Genome. We could not figure out how to create a product that would actually solve the problem that we had identified. We built a bunch of technology that we sold off, but at the end of the day, the business didn't work. So I'd love to just start, Scott, with, hey, what's your failure resume look like? What are some of the things that haven't worked for you? And then we'll dive into some of your other experiences.
Well, to be honest, interesting that you would start that way, right? So I had worked for a bigger company, you know, my career before starting Authentech, and I've actually only started two companies, right? One being Authentech and now K4 Connect. And I've only worked in my entire 40-year career for three companies, the one before the two I started being Harris Semiconductor. And you know, but the thing that always struck me is when I listen to these kind of presentations or somebody on the stage or whatever, it's about all the great things they did and how they did this and how they did that and how they did that, right? And, you know, how they raised a lot of money or how they managed their way through, you know, this or that downturn, including the pandemic, right? All these great, wonderful things they're doing. And you're like, you know, you sit in the office and or you sit in your chair and you go like, how come I'm not like that, right? My life sucks right now. You know, I can't raise money. And then everybody's pointing to these people that raise money. Look at them. They raise money and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, you know, so you hear all the positives, right? And, you know, people just highlight the positives of their career, right? It's just like watching Facebook. People don't live the lives they put on Facebook. They're not always on vacation. Their children aren't always nice and well-groomed and everything else, right? And you just don't realize, like, you know, the people that are speaking, they're going through the same, they went through the same things or are going through the same things as you are, right? But people only talk about the positives. And you know, it's interesting when you think of failure, right? People are always talking about failure and fail fast. And personally, I don't believe in failure, right? Ideas fail, products fail, companies fail. I've been to entire countries that have failed. But you really only fail if you give up, right? Otherwise, it's just an experience. And Scott, I have a whole shitload of experience, right? And so, you know, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't give up on that product. You might even give up on that company, right? But you learn from those experiences and drive forward. So my failures, my mistakes, I've been able to kind of manage through them, if you will, right? But there were some pretty dark times and it was hard. Right. So, you know, that's the way I kind of look at the dark side of being a founder.
So let's dig in there. You sort of breezed by it, but I'm gonna be more specific. So I want you to take us through the founding of Authentech. You know, you left the big company, you decided to form the company. And I want you to take me through that part of it and some of those dark times, because from the outside, it looks like, wow, you were acquired by Apple. At one point worth $1 trillion, the largest company on earth, how could it be that it wasn't just totally smooth sailing and the greatest thing ever? Hundreds of millions of people used your technology to unlock their phones with their thumbs or fingers. That certainly sounds like an unqualified success. So tell us the ugly bits from the time you founded it through the financial crisis and beyond.
Look, let's just start with starting a company. Like, it's hard, right? You have an idea, right, that other people haven't started that company before. It may be a unique idea or a unique approach. That was ours in Authentech. A lot of fingerprint sensors out there, but we thought we had a unique technology, a unique, you know, approach to the market, right? So you're kind of out there by yourself on that, right? A lot of people, by the way, will tell you it's a great idea. They don't give you money, right? They don't come work for you, but everybody's, you know, kind of positive. And then, you know, the first thing one of the very first things that you're dealing with as a founder, right, is raising money to bring forward that idea. And that is hard. It is like stupid hard. I often tell people raising money is like the homeless guy, right, on the side of the street holding a cardboard sign. Now, you know, okay, maybe there's some charlatans out there, but 99% of those people are good folks, right, that have fallen on very difficult times in their lives. And, you know, can you imagine, Scott, the first time you go out there, right, and you're holding that sign, right, I'll work for food, I'll work for, you know, whatever, right, and how humiliating that has to be, right? And so as you stand on that corner day after day, right, 98% of the cars just drive by it. They divert their eyes. They pretend like they're working on the radio. They'll do anything not to make eye contact with you. 1.5%, they'll flick you off or flick something at you, like a beer can or a cigarette butt. And 0.5%, they give you money. That is just like raising money, right, as a startup founder. And if you can't take that rejection, which is really, really hard, right? If you can't take that rejection, right, from the 99%, you know, you'll never be that founder and taking that vision forward, right? So that's very difficult. And a lot of people will say, you know, Scott, it must have been easier on your second time around, right? You have some history, you can go. It's not. I will say, I get rejected by a higher class of investor than I did before, right? But I still get rejected, right? And especially given we're mission-centered and I talk about being called and knowing why when I met a, you know, somebody with MS. And, you know, nobody's ever said anything negative to me. But look, I know they leave the meeting and go like, "Could you believe that guy? Like, what the hell was he talking about?" Right? So it's just hard getting that. And it's this whole idea of being able to tolerate rejection, right, while you're pursuing this vision that maybe you and only a couple of other people have. It's hard.
All right, so Authentech, you figured out how to raise some money. What happened? What happened when you got it to a place where you could take the company public? Then what happened? Everything just went perfectly, right?
Well, you know, look, you go through ups and downs the whole time, right? I mean, I remember when our first chip didn't work, right? And you know, we were a semiconductor company, right? It took millions of dollars to develop this chip, and we got it back, the first prototypes, and it didn't work, right? And I don't mean it didn't work well, right? I joke with people, right? There were, you know, I don't know if there were any electrons going in the damn thing, but there sure the hell weren't any coming out, right? And so, much longer story here, but, you know, we battled through. And frankly, if it hadn't been for my wife, Catherine, because I was looking at giving up, right? And I remember going home one night, and sitting on the living room couch, and I've told this story before. And, you know, it was the only time other than Christmas I ever remember sitting in our living room. And I just, for 2 hours, whined about how I've ruined our lives. And, you know, like literal tears, you know, coming down. That's not hard. I cry a lot. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I'm sure Catherine said something in that 2 hours, but I wasn't listening. I was just, you know, full on, like, I've ruined our lives, you know, blah, blah, blah. I've lost our money. I'm going to have to get another job. We're broke, blah, blah, blah. And she just said, you know what you need to do. So just go do it. Right. And if it wasn't for that, right, I don't know that we would have carried on. But as challenging as that was, and as dark as I thought it was, right, it was only after we went public that I really faced my darkest time on a personal level at Authentech.
So what happened?
Okay, it's a logical next step. But so we went public in 2007. Oh, I don't know if you remember, but then 2008 and 2009 happened, right?
That's usually how it goes. They go in order, right?
Yeah. Well, if you remember what happened in 08 and 09, right, which apparently some people don't, right, is where they forget, is, you know, the what do they call it? Great Recession. The financial system was near collapse, right? By the end of 08 and beginning of 09, I don't remember, you know, we started a board meeting and the first hour was, how much is our cash worth? How much is our cash worth? Right. I mean, so any financial instrument was in question. And so we went public in 07. We had five bankers, pretty common number on your book, right? But our two lead bankers, Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, and they were both out of business in 15 months, right? Our stock tanked, right? We didn't really do anything wrong, Scott. It was just, we were small cap, right? We were high-end PCs. Remember, there was no such thing as a high-end PC anymore. It was all about $300 and $400 netbooks, right? Our numbers shot down along with our stock. And I took it stupidly, as I look back now, exceedingly personally, right? Then we got sued, right? You know, class action, you know, stock, it went down, et cetera, et cetera. They were all eventually dismissed, right? But the fact of the matter is that on a personal level, right, I took it exceedingly personal, right? I mean, I can remember, Scott, sitting in my room, you know, our bedroom, right? Lights out, curtains drawn. And I'll be honest, I sat there and cried, right? It was really difficult times. And I took it, I look back now, as way too personally. But here's the problem with the founder. We all take it personally. This is our baby. Right? This is what we love. And we love the people that we work with, right? They you know, came in our coattails. You feel responsible for them. This is not some like CEO of a big corporation and people are just numbers on a financial sheet. These are people that we know. These are people that we care about, right? Even our investors, right? I felt like, you know, did I, you know, bring them down the wrong path, right? And I took all that very personally, way too personally. And it, you know, took some people to help me dig out of that. And of course, we continued on. But those are the things, when you care about something as much as a founder does, right? Those are some very, very difficult times. So again, when I'm watching somebody tell me how they did good, right? And, you know, how Scott Moody did this thing in Authentech and blah, blah, blah. Right. And I'm sitting there in my room, right, watching a podcast, crying, right, and going, how come I'm not like that? I wasn't like that. And so are a lot of other people. They're not like what you see in this. They're going through the same things that you feel now. Now they figured out how to get through it, and you need to get through it, right? But it's tough.
It's, I'm going to probe in on a few things here, but I'll share a piece. The statement, you know what you have to do. I, like you, have been fortunate to have a life partner that has kind of called me on my shit pretty regularly when I'm like in this head and hands, like, oh my God, what have I done here? And that's sort of the conversation. Well, you know what you have to do, just like go do that. Right. And it's, you need people around you that can kind of buck you up when you need it, but also call you out and say, come on, you're better than this. Like, this is not catastrophic. You can figure this stuff out. And, you know, so for those of you who don't, who haven't curated or found that person, find that person. It's really important. It's, they're as important as the person who's going to tell you, hey, look, you've got some things you got to work through here. And then the other thing I want to push on is that rejection piece. I tell a lot of young people, especially if they're thinking about being founders, to go take a job selling on the phone. You make 100 dials a day for 6 months straight, you learn a lot about how to overcome rejection, because it's just math. And yet, you know, you also know the exhilaration of that one in, that one a day that turns the corner, that gets you to make the sale, that feeds that commission for you. And I think we avoid those uncomfortable things at our peril. Because to your point, maybe it's raising money, or maybe it's pitching employees, or whatever it is. Getting over that rejection piece is a huge, huge, huge asset. Because then you, it's like calluses, right? You build up some capability to say, okay, this wasn't that bad. It's been worse. So you, I know you don't want to talk too much about sort of overcoming it, but I'm curious. You talked a little bit about your spouse helping you through. Was there any kind of, looking back on it, is there something that was particularly valuable that now you've created for yourself going forward? Was there some either relationship that you built, or a different kind of attitude you have now about these kinds of things that has helped you? Because this pandemic is a little bit like getting, you know, punched in the face. So what did you learn from that experience at Authentic, and how have you applied it here?
Yeah, so there's probably a few things, right, that were, you know, that as I look at K4 Connect, right, is as the pandemic started, I was worried about our team. I was worried about, right, the people that we serve, which are older adults, right, which are kind of in the middle of this crisis. And you know, I was really, Scott, I was probably working 90, 100 hours a week, right? And, you know, I was just so vested in making sure. And all of a sudden, I recognized it. Like, I recognized what I went through before. So one of those things, like, as I get older, right, you know, one of the things I appreciate is there's something to be said for experience, right? I've been through this before, or I've had this feeling before. And before it, you know, takes waste to me, I have to recognize it and address it, right? The second thing was, you know, talking to people, right, that I could trust. You were one of those, Scott, right? I could call and say, look, you know, I'm thinking of this, and I'm, you know, sometimes it's not like somebody has a specific answer, but you always have very good ideas. It's just, you need somebody to talk to, right? That could be Catherine, my wife, that could be you, right? It can be, you know, even my daughters to talk about things, right? But there was a group of people that I felt like I could call, right, and speak to, and including a couple of our, you know, board members, right? So so that's the second thing, is like having that trusted group that you can talk to. And it's not always for an answer, it's just to talk. And then kind of the third thing is just your health, right? I'm a big believer, right, in, you know, if you're not eating right, if you're not getting some, you know, level of exercise, right? If you're not getting some level of sleep, as difficult as that sounds, and I'm not a good, of those three, it's my big issue, right? If you're not taking care of yourself on a health-wise, physical health-wise, then your mental health will suffer, right? And so you know, you need to think of yourself as an athlete, right? So if an athlete gets, if you don't sleep for a few nights and then you go out and try to run a marathon or just a jog, right? You feel like crap, and you know it's because you didn't sleep right, right? You didn't get enough sleep. You don't know it, but that same thing is impacting your mental capability. It is diminished. You don't see it as much as your physical, right, activity, but it's there. So it's really those three things, right? Just the attitude of recognizing the challenges and starting to address it, right? Not getting down on yourself so much, right? And understanding you're going into a dark period, having the right people to talk to, right? And then taking care of yourself, right, when it comes to your health.
It's really good advice on the relationship one. I think investing in the relationships along the way, kind of not, you know, before you need them, right? Creating those relationships and investing in them so that when you need to draw on them, they're available to you. I've been through some dark, ugly periods, sometimes really challenging. Sometimes I tend to run hot most of the time. Like I tend to run kind of on the manic scale where I'm just, you know, and I'm generally energized and positive, but I do go into some dark places. And during this pandemic, I went through a period where I was having a hard time pretty much every day. And I found myself, drinking every day, which was unusual for me at the level that I was. So must be like 8 or 9 weeks ago now, I took out a deck of cards. And I went for 52 days without drinking. So I started with the Two of Hearts and I landed on the Ace of Spades. And I needed a device to like help me track it, because I don't know about anybody else, but the fourth dimension, time, seems to be lost. I can't figure out, like, I know it's Tuesday because it says so, but like, I don't know what happened before.
Right.
But to your point, recognizing, hey, I'm in a bad spot and I'm doing things that are not like me. I've got to do something to disrupt that behavior is a key place, and have people around you that can sort of support you. And, you know, I think that your point about kind of that experience, like I tell a lot of people who are going through things now, keep a journal, write down what you're experiencing now. For most of you, this is not the last company you'll start. You will start another one. And so kind of remembering what you're experiencing in this moment and sort of locking it down can be really valuable, because you'll draw back on it at some time in the future. I want to touch on a couple of things that are specific to Authentic that came up in the chat, because we're going to move to other topics. But so one of them is, prior to Authentic, you worked at a big company. What was the transition like? How did you exit, and what made you enter? Like, what was the transition between working at a larger, the safety of a large company, and moving into, oh my gosh, I'm going to go do this thing, you and your co-founder?
Yeah. So the positive aspect of working for a big company, right? I mean, you said what you tell entrepreneurs to do, right? Is, and I tell you, want to be an entrepreneur, right? Go work for a bigger company, right? Go work for another company, because then you gain some experience and, you know, in how this works. You get into things more in depth than you will in school, right? So on and so forth. So the benefit was, by the time I started a company, which was a semiconductor company, and the bigger company was a semiconductor company, I knew a lot of what we were doing, right? I understood the customers, right? A fingerprint sensor was completely new. But, you know, I was already selling to, I started as a new college engineer, ended up running a division, right? So I had a lot of experience through that time. And, but it was funny. I mean, every VC I went to, right, invariably one of their comments was, what makes, you know, a big company guy think they can do a startup? And I'm like, no, I work hard, and I did, and, you know, so on and so forth. And like, you don't know, right? And they were right. I didn't know, right? It's, you know, me and three people, and we're like, what do we do next, right? You know, there's no payroll. The simple things of all that stuff, right? No less, right? I had sales guys that brought me into Dell or brought me into Apple, right? Now I had to go figure out who to call myself. I remember the first time I went to China, and there's nobody right there to greet me at the airport. And I'm driving in a car, and I swear to God, Scott, I thought I had been kidnapped. I'm like, I had no idea that the airport was so far away from downtown Shanghai. I'm thinking, I'll never see anybody again. I'm trying to dial the phone, the airport, my wife. I can't figure out how to dial out of China. And the operator was no help because that was all in Chinese. Like, you are completely by yourself, right? But it is hard. And I mean, and to that end, right, you're doing a lot of things. You're selling all the time, right? You're selling people to come join the company. You're selling customers, right? You're selling, the vision for where you want to go. You're selling to investors, right? You're probably selling to your family that I'm not blown it here. But there was a point, honestly, that was difficult. It turned out I could do it. I could manage through. I'm not a cold caller, right? I'm not that personable of a guy, honestly, unless I know you. And then I'm going to shut up. But, picking up a phone and blind calling, right? 50 people at Dell to try to find one that might be interested in what we're doing, right? That's hard. You got to suck it up. But you just need to push through that. Now, the positive end was once we got to a certain size, where a lot of founders start to struggle unless they bring in people around them, right? It was like we got to a certain size and it was like, wait a minute. Like, I've been here before. I know how to do this. Right. So, I was able to carry on, but
it's an interesting challenge that the 0 to 1 problem, right. How to get to that first step is a completely different set of challenges than 1 to 10 and 10 to 100. And, the venture funds, venture capitalists who want to invest in people who, especially if you're early stage, know how to make that first leap. And then when you go to raise your later round of capital or you take a company public, they want the senior seasoned executive that knows how to run a big thing to do that. So
right.
you end up having to leave. I have a couple of rapid fire questions for you. What was the original use case for Authentic? It wasn't for mobile devices. What was the original purpose for the fingerprint reader?
So actually our first presentation, like literally had a fingerprint sensor in the middle of the chart and had about 10 different markets. Right. And so the idea was, let's design this thing. And while we had multiple IOs on it, so we could interface, right, serial and all these other things that were actually IOs back then. Right. The chip was a little bit bigger. We knew this idea that we could play across and multiple markets, see which one went first. Right. And then zero in on that. But interesting enough, mobile was on there. Right. Oh. Mobile was on there in the context of a flip phone. But my belief was that flip phone would, get smarter and smarter and you'd have more information on it. And eventually you would need a fingerprint sensor on it. Now that was back in 97 and 98. So it was a little fortuitous, but we had a strategy of, I don't know exactly what market's going to be successful, right? Let's manage our risk by targeting. And then once we focused, we dumped the rest.
Got it. And then another follow on to that is, did you always intend to take the company public, or was that a consequence of a bunch of other choices?
Look, it was my optimal idea to take a company public. It's the same thing, with K4 Connect, right? Could we be acquired, or, could Authentic be acquired? Of course, that's always, an option and you have to look at that. But I was thinking an IPO, right from the beginning. Now, that probably is not a great idea if you think about it, because the probability of an IPO is very low. But again, it's my baby and I wanted to see it through. It wasn't just about making some money.
So I want to turn to sort of sticking to some of the dark side of things. there are times when it's incredibly lonely. You talked about sort of sitting in your own bedroom and sort of crying into your hands. What are some of those moments, or can you give me an example of one moment of that time where you sort of felt that way? And then Was there knowing how you made it through that? Are there some things that you draw on when you're in that state of like, I feel incredibly alone?
I mean, it really goes back to those points I made before, right? Is one is to recognize it. And I definitely, you know, beat myself up sometimes in exercising, right? It's not just a little jog. I'm doing 220 hill repeats, right? And like puking when I'm done. It's just to kind of beat that out of you in a way, right? And it's kind of that physical element. But the other part is really going back and just, there are really two other elements, to be frank with you, Scott, is one is the people, right? And look, when you're deciding to start a company, and if you have a family, it really is a family decision, right? And then, you know, all of that, you know, the whole family is kind of vested in the process, right? And, you know, you need to share that with them and make sure that you're all right on board, particularly your spouse, right? You're not making a decision for yourself. You're really making a decision, you know, for the two of you, right? And then third, right, you know, I have a strong faith, Scott, right? And I have found myself continually going to that. And, you know, it was actually a person associated with that got me out of the depth of my darkness at Authentac. And I remember calling a priest friend of mine, right, and asking to have lunch. And, you know, we were getting sued. The stock had gone down, right? I just figured everybody was like laughing at us and so on and so forth. And he's a good friend, right? And I call him and I meet with him and over lunch, right? Well, start off, he knows nothing about our issues, right? So, you know, you think the whole world is looking at you, but you're like this little puke company. The whole world's not looking at you, right? And second, you know, I just started in, right? John, you know, the company tanked, and he's like, Scott, the whole world is tanked, right? Like, what are you talking about, right? But John, and, you know, of course, there's the normal tears coming out of my eyes. I'm not bawling, but they're tears, right? And finally, right, and you know, some people will understand this. You know, I said, but John, people had faith in me. And John said, then they had faith in the wrong person. Now, what he meant was that people, right, had put their, things were great before that, right? Everything was going up to the right, and you know, everybody was doing financially great. And then, you know, kind of forgot about God or whatever, you know, spiritual part of their life. It was all about money and success, and I can do this all by myself. And, you know, and that's how he meant it, right? People were putting their faith in the wrong thing, right? Now, there are people that, when I tell that story, like, oh my God, like how rude and mean of him to say that, but that's not what he meant. But what I took it as is like, how important do I really think I am? Right? I have a little puke company, right? That's important to me. And these, I don't know how many people we had, 100, 150 at the time, they're important to me. But I'm not bringing down the world crisis, right? And it was from that, I just said to myself, it's time to pull up my big boy britches and get back to work. Now, there was work to be done on me mentally, which I worked, right? But that was the thing. And so, I do put a lot of faith is an important part of my life, and it's how I started this company. And I know that's not true for everybody listening in today, but for those people that are faithful, then there are times when it's like, okay, it's not about me, and right, and I'm not going to get through this by myself, right? And so to lean on others, right, and something more important than yourself, I think that's pretty important.
That's a big deal. One of the questions that came through, and you just referenced it again, is when I say, someone says to me, you know what I need to do, often it's because I've expressed the solution already. I've worked through it, but I either don't have the conviction to go do it, or I'm sort of complaining about how difficult it's going to be. And so it's not so much that like the answer appears, it's mostly like, okay, there's these things I have to deal with, whatever the problems are. And as entrepreneurs, we're mostly problem solvers. So when my spouse says, you know what you need to do, it's usually because I've rattled off the three miserable things that I have to deal with that I really would like not to deal with, I'd like somebody else to have to deal with. But, you know, it's like, well, you have to deal with those things.
That's a super valid point. I said it before, Scott, right, is that it wasn't that you're looking for somebody to give you the answer. It's just somebody to talk to and talk things through, right? And then they usually are picking out something that you said, just like, right, Catherine did or Leslie does, right, is, you know, hey, you already know what you need to do. You just need to go ahead and decide and go do it. And that's hard. I will tell you, I recently read a book, right? I usually don't remember the name. I told you this earlier, right? I usually don't remember the author, the name of the book. I just remember the context of the stories, right? But I do remember this one because it was recent and I thought it was really good. The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. And it was really the first book, right, that I read that didn't just tell you all the good things and how they were successful, but like this part of being a founder sucks. This part about, excuse my language, about being a founder sucks, right? Is, and it was like, hey, there's realism in this book, right? Like I'm not alone, right? And that's one of the things why I wanted to talk about these things is like when I'm listening to people, I'm just thinking like, I'm the only one, right? It's just like when you're looking at Facebook, I'm the only one with spoiled kids. I'm the only one that has this issue. I'm the only one that's not going on vacation. It's not like that.
No, that's absolutely right. So I want to touch on a few questions that have come in. We won't get to all of them, but one is, you know, it's a question about, you've got a vision, you've got conviction about the vision, but you might be getting all kinds of data coming at you that is either could be invalidating to it, it could be challenging to it, it could be in opposition to what you're trying to accomplish. How do you process that inbound information that could be taking you to, could be incorporated to maybe move you off your game? How do you keep the vision in mind while you might be getting slammed by other information that might be knocking you around a bit and could take you off of that vision? How do you keep that conviction up?
So look, there's no perfect plan, right? Back in the old days, we actually wrote a business plan, right? So like that, I haven't seen one of those in a long time, but, you know, I think the bigger issue, right, Scott, is that all these different pieces of data, I watch people ping pong all over the place, right? I used to call it back, remember the old magazine, Red Herring? It was the magazine for VCs. And I had a couple of board members, I knew exactly what they were going to say their strategy should be at the next board meeting because they just read it in Red Herring, right? I called it Red Herring VCs. It was like, here's our new strategy, right? Like, this is hot, and this is hot, and this is hot. Right. And so, you know, if you find yourself zigzagging all over strategically, right, you probably have a bigger problem, right, than any other problem, you know, you can have. And by the way, I always like, if you do exactly what the board tells you to do and it's wrong, you get fired, right? They never fire themselves, right? And so they're looking to you. And so you have to assimilate this data, right, and then look at it, right? Usually it's a modification of where you're going, just like in anything we do, right? It's not a, you know, a complete course correction. Now there are times like this, right, that, you know, you could argue, well, I was using my tech for this, right, but that this doesn't exist anymore, right? So how do I use our core competencies, right, to kind of pivot to something else? Now, at Authentech, we actually started with that attitude. I mentioned it before, like, hey, I don't know which one of these markets are going to go, right? But then you have to realize what your core competency is, right? And then, you know, assimilate that data and decide. But you can't be like, oh, I'm going to go run and do this month. And then, oh, next month, I'm going to go do this. And next month, I'm going to do this because I read this great article and everybody's funding that, right? That's the, I think, a bigger challenge, right, for that entrepreneur, right, is to keep from that zigzag.
Yeah, it's one, it's, I'll just pile on there and then I'll come back to, maybe we can get at least one more question in. is I think there's a big difference between having the vision and recognizing you may need to adjust your strategy to get to that vision. And and then from a data standpoint, I usually go back to customers. I really don't care about anybody else's opinion. I want to know who's actually exchanging money for whatever it is that we're doing. Those are the people that matter most. And I sort of discount our board. I discount my peers. I sort of discount everybody. You tell me you talked to 10 customers, I'm listening. You tell me that you read something in a magazine, I'm not interested. And I use customer as the most broadest way. There's multiple stakeholders involved, but usually the ones that exchange money for what they're doing have a particularly high rate. And it has to be more than one customer, because you can get jerked around by one big customer sending you off the deep end somewhere. So you've got to incorporate that in. You want to add something?
Follow on that, Scott, just to say, when you're talking to that customer, it's not necessarily the specific little thing they tell you to do, which is an increment, right, of an idea they saw from a competitor. And by the time you have it, the competitor will already have it, because they're big, and big companies increment. But it's really to understand, right, you know, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And then how can you come in with something unique on that problem?
That's right. Yeah, the problem piece is critical. Ask what the problem is, and say, okay, so we're going to do a quick lightning round. First question, how many hours of sleep do you get a night?
Now I try for 7. It's probably between 5 and 7. I used to tell people, as long as I got 4 hours of sleep when I was younger, that was fine. It was totally associated with how much caffeine I had that day, right, and being able to stay awake. But I would say I target 7. I have difficulty sleeping over 7.
All right. And the question was asked to me too. I get six hours of sleep. I can run for a really long time, but I am a napper. So I typically take half an hour a day if I can carve it in my schedule to take a 25-minute nap. And then on the weekends, all bets are off. If I lay down, I lay down until I wake up. All right. And the last thing is, if you had one piece of advice for any of our founders or people watching this video, what's the one thing to sort of keep in mind as a founder to kind of make it through those dark moments?
Well, it's to keep on going. Right. I mean, you know, yeah, look, I did cry in my bedroom, but, you know, I got back up. Right. I didn't give up. Right. And look, maybe your company doesn't make it. That doesn't mean you're a failure. That idea didn't work out. Right. But then how do you use that to, you know, improve? And honestly, Scott, nothing has happened in my life I don't really think of as something that made me better. Right. And I even had, you know, a brain tumor 5 years ago, and well, I guess it was about 5 years ago, and it was not a fun experience, but I do think it made me a better person for who we serve, right? Because, you know, it's one thing to walk and try to understand somebody, but, you know, you really don't understand them until you walk in their shoes. And I got to walk in those shoes, or in that case, not walk for a little while, right? And I really could understand people better. Now, it wasn't so much fun at the time. Your company's right, you know, going through this dark period, it's not so much fun at the time, right? But, you know, if you keep going and you look back, then you can take the positives and the learnings from that, right, and build a better company, and most importantly, probably a better you.
Absolutely. Scott, this was awesome. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Founders Focus. What did you think? You got any feedback for us? Got a topic that you'd like us to discuss? Or maybe a future co-host? We'd love to hear from you. Just hit me up on LinkedIn at tscottcase and join us at foundersfocus.com to stay up to date with the latest episodes, and join us live every week at our Founders Focus sessions. Hope to see you there.